Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery. And that is why the Machinery Digest exists. A no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello and welcome back to Idle Chatter. I'm Ray Bohax, the Hot Rod Farmer, coming to you as always, as I say, from Cat Swamp Road in Warren County, New Jersey. So hopefully you guys had a good week on your farm operation. I had a interesting past couple of days, sadly, and if I don't see myself today, I ask you to please forgive me because my thoughts are a little bit wandering. Everybody has their kryptonite. As a matter of fact, in my church, I'm what they call a lay speaker, so I have probably delivered about 50 or 60 sermons, and sadly, one funeral, and the spiritual part of a wedding, obviously not the legal aspect of marrying two people. But I did a sermon once, and I said that, in life, you have to identify your kryptonite. And for those of us old enough to remember Superman, was as strong as could be, but the kryptonite sapped all of his power. And we all have our own kryptonite. And I guess that we just have to recognize what it is. And what your kryptonite is not my kryptonite. But my kryptonite has always been animals. And, people, and as much as I love agriculture, love machinery, love engines, love technology like that, but my heart really belongs to animals. And I'm just that's my kryptonite. That just saps everything out of me. So anyway, with that established, my cat on the farm here, Donald, we actually have three cats. We have Renee, Mimi, and Donald, who is about 6 months old, and they're all found their way here to the farm. Renee is probably about 12 years old because my dad will be dead 10 years, and she was about 2 years. We had her about 2 years before he passed away, and Mimi, I believe, was Renee's child, so she's about a year younger than Renee, or give or take. But both Mimi and Renee are quasi-feral cats. We had them spayed, but Mimi I could pick up every once in a while and pet her. Renee I never have, but they live here on the farm, and they look fantastic, thank God. But anyway, to make a long story short, right after corn harvest this past fall, I went in to go see my hens, my chickens, my trumpets, they have a 30-by-50-foot pen right off our driveway, and it's really nice. And they have they have different roosts in there, and they have a big coop in there, and what have you. So they're spoiled little girls, and we love them to death. But right after corn harvest, because I know my sister already went back home to Buffalo, Tonawanda actually, and I could tell they were acting funny and they're like hiding something from me. So what they did is that they had a kitten in there, a little kitten, just, I guess, old enough to eat. I don't know where the kitten came from. The pen is fenced in with cattle wire, so it's about 2 inches wide and about 3 inches long, the slots. So he was able to fit through there. And it took about a week for me to befriend him, and then he became our cat, and we called him Donald. And so Donald is about 6 months old. He's a Russian blue, I guess predominantly Russian blue, but he has two white spots, one on his belly and one on his chest, and just a very, very nice cat. And but the problem with Donald is that he likes to run in front of cars. So coming when the other day when I came home from coffee in the morning, I come down the driveway and I put my window down on the passenger side and I say hello to my girls, my hens, and I say I wish them a good morning. And then I saw Donald in the driveway and I pull into the garage and I creep into the garage because these cats like to go underneath the car, underneath the tires and what have you. And specifically Mimi, she'll lay down and roll over as you're driving. And I saw Donald and he was fine. And I creeped into, I creep into the garage and I always put the window down on the driver's side. So in case I hear something or hit something, I could hear it. And all of a sudden I hear him screaming. So, oh God, I ran him over. So I said, well, I had to run him over going forward. So I said, let me back up. And so I just wanted to roll back a couple inches and then he screamed again. And you know, with all these new cars today, the newer cars, you know, you can't get out of the vehicle right away. I mean, he's got the seatbelt on and the doors are locked and you got to step on the brake to put it in park. So all these stuff, I jumped out of the car as quickly as I could and said a prayer, quick prayer in my mind. And I just kind of expected to see him squished like a squirrel on the road. I mean, but he was not there. He ran away. So what had happened is that he ended up cracking his pelvis, or I cracked his pelvis. I broke his femur in three places, and I broke his tail. So I didn't realize that he was that damaged. He had no external signs of bleeding. I was able to pick him up. He didn't have any signs of internal bleeding. So since the thing with Donald was that he has never seen another human being since he's been here. And that could sound ridiculous, but we live on a farm. My sister lives up in Buffalo, New York. The majority of all of our local family has passed away. We have no neighbors. And he literally has not seen another person other than my wife and I since he's been here. So I said, well, I'm not going to take him to the vet today. I'm able to hold him and pick him up and what have you and see what the story is with him. And then that was on Thursday. And then on Friday, I gleaned that he was not getting anywhere near better. And I took him to the local vet, who was very nice, gave me an emergency appointment. And I didn't have a cat carrier. He had to lend me a cat carrier. And we brought him in and Donald was wonderful in the car going there. He was wonderful. He was a real trooper. And they did x-rays on him and blood work, and they discovered those three things. So he says, but I have to go to a surgeon because he needs to have a titanium rod or a pin put in his leg. So I said, where would I go for that? So he says, well, there's a surgical center, 24-hour surgical center. There's two that he would recommend. One is in Fairfield, New Jersey, and one is in Lebanon, New Jersey. Fairfield's closer to the city, and Lebanon is more in a quasi-rural area. There's still cornfields there, so I guess that's good. So I said, well, who do you suggest, doctor? And he said, well, they're both excellent. He says, but whoever could be able to take him. So I ended up taking him to Lebanon, which was only about 50 miles, maybe not even 50 miles, but about an hour away, and was there till like 10 o'clock at night. And they had to admit him, but they weren't going to do the surgery then. So it just got very complicated. And coming home, I stopped to buy gas. I needed gas and then in town. And I pulled out of the gas station and forgot to put my headlights on because all of these new cars have these electroluminescent dashboards. So I went like three blocks and the cop got me and pulled me over. But thank God he was very, very nice. So by the time I got home, it was like 11 o'clock at night from 4 o'clock in the morning. And it was just, I was fit to be tied that then. I can only imagine, you hear so many times accidents on the farm where a parent runs over a child or an infant, or the child gets caught in a PTO or in a grain bin. I can't imagine how they feel. So I just feel terrible about Donald. They did not do the surgery. They didn't do the surgery. They were going to wait till Monday. I'm actually recording this show on Sunday instead of Saturday because I was at the hospital with him. And they were going to wait till Monday. So I said, well, I'm going to take him home. I'm not going to warehouse him there. Let him be at home for 36 or 40 hours, and then I'll bring him back Monday morning. So tomorrow morning, which obviously would mean nothing to you if you're listening to 6 months from now, I got to leave about 4:30 in the morning to bring him to the hospital for the surgery. And but the thing basically is, I don't remember if I told you that he broke his tail also, and I didn't realize that actually out of his injuries, the tail is the most worrisome, because I didn't realize that with the tail that the nerves go in there and they control the bladder and the bowels. So thankfully he's been doing his business properly, but so we don't know what's going to happen with that, but it's in God's hands. But the leg is the least of it. The leg is the most is obviously an orthopedic operation, but that I wouldn't think that, you know, that the tail would be such a key component to his life and to his quality of life. So God willing, we'll see what happens. So I ask you to please forgive me if my thoughts are not where they are. I just feel terrible about doing this to him. I don't know what he did. My wife and my sister thinks that he lay down in front of the tire as I was creeping in, which it probably would be correct given where his brakes are. They like to lay down and then roll over as you're moving the car or truck forward. So God willing, he gets through this. And like I said, if my thoughts seem to be wandering, that is why, because animals of all kind, they don't have to be mine. Any type of animals, my kryptonite and I have a deep passion and care for all of God's creation, and to think that I ran him over was just devastating to me. So, well, hopefully, God willing, you guys are having a better week. And I know there's so many things going on in the world and so many things in everybody's life. So thank you for letting me share that with you. And the only reason why I did share it with you is that if you are a new listener to the show, and I know we get new listeners every week, I don't want you to think, well, that guy's so lackluster. He's got no passion in his voice. That is truly not the case. It's just that my thoughts were a little bit someplace else today. So the other thing that I want on a happier note is that I got a nice email from from Bruce in New Hampshire, Jack Uborkis, and he's a fairly recent listener to the show. I mentioned his name before. He had corresponded about a brake issue advice I gave a listener in Ohio or Michigan. But anyway, Bruce sent me, he's quite a fabricator, and he sent me a picture of a beautiful lift table that he built in his farm shop to be able to service his lawn tractor. And, you know, the reason why first of all, kudos to Bruce. It's gorgeous. The lift table is gorgeous. He did a beautiful job on it. And he's obviously a very, very accomplished fabricator. But a lot of, I know for a fact that, you know, that listeners come from all different places. And if you happen to catch, no matter how you listen to my show, I'm grateful and I'm honored. But, you know, please keep in mind that there is a website that supports the show, farmmachinerydigest.com. And I know that a good portion of the listeners are not cognizant or not visiting the website. And a lot of you are, and then vice versa. Some people that visit the website aren't listening to the show, but I guess that's like anything in life. But the fact is that if you were to, now that things are more well established, is that there is a section in my website, and it's under the community tab. So if you go to the homepage and look at the community tab, there is a section, and it's called What is in Your Machinery Shop? ? And the purpose of that section, and now that we have a larger audience and more traction, the purpose of that section is to give you the ability, and also for me to enjoy, for the ability for you to showcase on my website pictures of different machinery, tools, what have you, that are very, very special to you. And a lot of people, I do have a good number of images there, nothing near what I would want, but people think they have to have a beautiful tractor, a beautiful truck, or a beautiful, that's not what it's about. And if you read the description on that page on my website. This has to be special to you. I don't care whether it's a chainsaw. I don't care whether it's a box end wrench. I don't care whether it's a 2020 tractor. I don't care what it is. It doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be shiny. It doesn't have to be new. It doesn't have to be old. It's a piece of machinery or a tool that is special to you. Because if it is special to you, it is special to me. And it could be an old toolbox that grandpa had that he left to you. It could be, like I say, a 2020 John Deere combine or whatever. I mean, so it has to be special to you. And so, I really would like for you guys to reach out and you know, keep in mind, like I said, I keep repeating it because people say, oh, my, whatever it is, my tractor is not beautiful. If it's special to you, it's special to me. And I would love to post it and put it on that website for people in 42 countries that listen to this show for able to see. So with that, as soon as things calm down a little bit here, I'm going to send the pictures of Bruce's beautiful lift table that he sent me, and we're going to post that on What Is In Your Machinery Shed. So please check that out. And under that community tab, there is also a place for, as I said, animals are my kryptonite, for the animals that are in your life. They could be pets, they could be farm animals, they could be wild animals, what have you. And feel free to send pictures into that. And then also there is a patriotic section. So if you see something or you have something on your farm, you happen to see something, you're traveling or whatever, and you see an image, you view something that evokes a lot of patriotism in your heart. It could be something as simple as a flag waving in a cornfield, or it could be a bumper sticker or a banner, or it could be whatever, but it evokes a level of patriotism. When you see it, your knee-jerk reaction is that. So send a picture and we'll post it in there. But probably another week or so, if you get a chance, go to What Is In Your Machinery Shop under the community tab, and you will see Bruce's beautiful, beautiful lift table for his lawn tractor. And I think that's great. So, you know, so check it out, and please send your images and send it. Could be anything. I have an airplane up there. I have tractors up there, whatever. It makes no difference. Like I said, if it is special to you, it is special to me. And things that in life that are special don't necessarily have to be pretty. They don't have to be expensive. They have history with us. They have meaning in our life. It could be your first toolbox. It could be your first car. It could be whatever, your first tractor. It could be a planter. It could be a disc harrow. If it's special to you, it's special to me here at the Farm Machinery Digest. So please check that out and then go from there and send in those pictures. And all you need to do is send them to Hot Rod Farmer at farmmachinerydigest.com. And if you can, just add a paragraph or so to it. Once you go to that section, you'll see there's an area that has a description, and there's areas with just pictures. The ones that just have pictures are because people sent them in and didn't give me any explanation. You don't have to write a thesis. You could say, hey, this circular saw was grandpa's, and he bought it after World War II, and it still works, and it doesn't work anymore, but it's grandpa's, and I love it, and I keep it on the shelf because it reminds me of him every time I look at it. That's what it's all about. So please send those in. So now we are going to, I'll tell you what today's show is going to be about, and what we're going to discuss today is two topics that probably very rarely get discussed. I've discussed them in generality in previous shows. I can't tell you when, because we have over 100 shows right now with the Hot Rod Farmer Minutes. So, but it's probably within the past 6 or 8 months, I did discuss those in two separate shows, and we're part of it. And we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive today. And what the deeper dive is going to be into is, we're going to go a little bit more into engine oils. That's always a slippery subject, right? that always is a topic that most farmers and most enthusiasts, anybody that's interested in engines and vehicles and machinery, like to talk about. And we're going to do a deeper dive into oil viscosity. And then we're also going to do a dive into octane ratings of gasoline. And like I said, I've done basics on those shows, on those topics in individual shows, but we're going to go to, so if that was, if that was oil 101, this is going to be oil 201. And if that was if it was gasoline 101, this is going to be 201 now. But before we do that, we are going to have to start off with our bushels and cents segment. So as we all realize, success on the farm or ranch is a three-legged stool: agronomy, marketing, and machinery. The best way to establish how a poor decision or inaccurate diagnosis of a machinery issue costs your operation money is to reference it in crop, and I will use corn at $3.50 a bushel. And never forget, it is not what you make, but what you keep that counts. So for those that are new to the show today and listening for the first time, what I basically want to do in the bushels and cents segment is that I want to take an avoidable issue as far as machinery is concerned and say to you, okay, this costs you $350 that you could have avoided. I would say that would cost you the value of 100 bushels of corn at $3.50. And I always felt that if you look at it that way, it doesn't get lost in the bookkeeping of your farm or ranch operation. Because if you were to look and say, man, I just dumped, 100 bushels of corn on the road or in the corner of the field, then you would basically, that would resonate with you. But something that you cost you $350 that you could avoid it is basically the same thing. Excuse me. All right, so here is today's segment. You need to change the air filter on a turbocharged diesel engine. And I worded it this way, and these are all true stories. Their names are changed. There are no names, but they're changed to protect the innocent, right? Like the old police shows from the 60s used to say. And the reason why I'm saying is a turbocharged engine, because this is going to be unique to a turbocharged engine, all right? So you need to change the air filter on a turbocharged diesel engine. The factory air filter costs $85. An aftermarket replacement from China costs $35. And we know that's common, right? The big price differential. It does not look that much different, so you save the $50 and buy the aftermarket air filter. About a year later, the seal in the turbo goes and it sucks oil. It costs you $1,200 to get it repaired and balanced. The rebuilder tells you that if you do not use an original equipment or name brand air filter, he will not warranty the repair. And the reason for that being is many cheap filters have a flow restriction, which creates a low pressure area around the turbocharger seal, causing it to fail. So it actually creates, because it's a restrictive air filter, even though it's brand new, it doesn't have the flow capability. And since it's on the intake side of the turbo, which is the compressor side, right? Not the turbine side, which is the exhaust driven, it's going to be creating a little like a sucking like that, all right, a low pressure. So it would almost be like cavitation in a fluid. It would be almost like air cavitation, all righty? So around the turbo seal, causing it to fail, because what happens is that you'll have oil pressure on the seal and you'll actually be having a vacuum on the other side of the seal as the seal rides against the shaft because of the restricted airflow of this inadequate air filter that looks the same, and then the high pressure is eventually going to push through and violate the seal. And once the seal becomes violated, then it will have a propensity to leak and put oil into the induction system, and then the turbocharger will need to be rebuilt completely. So that basically, in essence, the Chinese air filter costs you the equivalent of 343 bushels of corn. But hey, you saved that $50 up front from buying a cheapo air filter. Don't let this be you. Alrighty? So keep that in mind. I'm not going to go round robin and say, well, this filter is good and this filter is not good. The fact of the matter is that I always like to say buy OE filters, buy OE parts. But if you're not going to buy OE parts or filters, then buy a well-established name brand made in USA air filter or oil filter or water pump, what have you. So the thing is that, there's a reason why that part is cheaper. And usually by the time you find out that it's cheaper, it is way, way, way too late. So like I say, let this not be you. And if you have any questions or comments on that, usually something that brings a lot of activity and says, oh, I buy XYZ brand and it just is good and whatever. So God bless you. I mean, feel free to contact me. I'll always respond back to you. But the facts are the facts. And the thing is that, you know, hey, maybe XYZ brand is just as good, but I don't want to be the one to test it. I don't want to be the guinea pig to find out. So I'd rather spend the $50 more, get the factory part, put it in there, forget about it, and be done with it. So, but that is your decision, as long as you know that, and as you look at it as far as bushels of crop or yield, whatever your crop may be, or if you're a dairy farmer, 100 weight milk, what have you, then you start to look at it and say, hey, man, I really can't afford to take that chance. I really want to have the reliability, because remember, agriculture runs on machinery, but your profits run on reliability. So keep that in mind. Alrighty, so today we are going to be talking about, we're going to start off talking about oil, and what we're going to discuss relatively in depth is we're going to speak about the viscosity test procedure of oil. And let me see how I could come in this succinctly so I don't waste a lot of your time listening to it. You know, if you go to the store, and I don't care, you know, whatever big box store, you go to the farm supply store, auto parts store, what have you. You go to buy oil, and oil has a rating on it. An SAE rating and a rating from the API, American Petroleum Institute. It's standard. So the thing basically is that on gasoline engines, I believe the current standard is SN. And what will happen is that over the years that they'll modify what the standards are for oil and for that, for those newer vehicles. And that's why it's always important for when you have any type of machinery, any type of engine, that you look in the owner's manual and it'll say you need to use an SG or later grade of oil. And that's not the viscosity, that's the standard that the oil needs to meet. So currently, I believe that we're at SN for gasoline engines, and I believe for diesels, we're at CJ4. And also now FA4, like Ford Apple 4, CJ4 and FA4. And we'll discuss that in a little bit more detail in a few minutes. So that is, so basically in essence, and what you'll find that in almost every instance that a modern oil, unless it's noted someplace, is backward compatible. And the ratings go, so SN, they follow the alphabet. So years ago it was SA, SB, SC, SD. And so now we're up to letter SN. And then there are other aspects of the oil that may be brand, I don't mean brand specific as far as the oil is concerned, but the requirements of the engine manufacturer. So when you're buying an oil, you need to keep that all in mind. So what confuses most people, and rightfully so, is that let's say you go to the store, and we're going to talk about automotive oil right now, and we're going to get into diesel. All of this holds true for both, but it's a little bit easier to use the automotive side of it because there are more oils available for the most part. You're not going to go into the supermarket and buy oil for a combine. All right, they wouldn't have the proper oil there, but they do have oil that can be used in automobiles, in 2020 automobiles. So we're going to use that as as our example, and then I'll break off into the diesel side of it in a minute or two. So now, so many people look at oil as they do windshield washer fluid. When they look at tires, round, black, and hard, right? So the thing basically is that, so if let's say you go to the store and you have a quart of store brand engine oil, and let's say it's 5W30 oil, and it meets the SN standard, the API and SAE standards for SN. All right, so that's the latest standard. So now you look at that quart of oil, and it's $2, making up numbers. And then you look right next to it on the shelf is a name brand quart of oil, not a store brand. Obviously, the store didn't make the oil. Somebody bottled it for them. But it's a name brand or quart of oil, instead of $2, that oil is $3 a quart. And I'm just assigning numbers to this, as I said. And it says it's SN, and it's 5W30, same right. I forgot what I said. I've said 530 or 1030. We'll use 530. All right, so erase the 1030 if I said that. And so you look at it and say they're both SN, They're both 5W30, and this oil costs more money. I might as well save the money because it's right round, black, and hard like tires and windshield washer fluid. Everything is the same, right? Well, it is not the same. And in the previous show a while back, as I spoke about, you know, there's a lot of elements to oil, and it's the grade of the crude oil that is used, that the additive packages in it, the refining package, what have you. But we're not even going to go there today. So what I'm basically going to do is I'm going to say to you, well, lots of times people will say, well, I used to use brand X 5W30 oil, and then the engine would tap when it was cold or tap when it was hot, and I changed to brand Y 5W30, the same rating SN will say, and the engine is now quiet. How can that be? They're both 5W30s SN rating. Well, the fact of the matter is that it is very simple, because the SN rating only means so much, and the 5W30 only means so much. There are parameters that we need to be concerned with beyond those numbers. And when you're buying a high quality oil, and you say to me, Ray, what's a high quality oil? For most part, a high quality oil is the top of the line brand from a known manufacturer, Valvoline, Pennzoil, Mobil, what have you. All right, there's Texaco, whatever it may be, Shell sort of thing, is Castor Oil. So if their top of the line oil is historically their highest quality oil. So now let's talk about this. Why can a 5W30 SN oil from brand A have different performance results in an engine than a 5W30 SN oil from brand B, forgetting about the additive package and what have you, even though that all comes into play, but we're not going to discuss the chemistry of the oil. We're going to discuss the procedure that you need to understand. And the same is going to hold true for diesel. Now, the fact of the matter is that if you were to go into your field with a combine, and you're going to combine your crop, and you say, okay, I'm going into this field, and let's say it's a 100-acre field, and you're looking at the yield monitor, and this part of the field, you may have 400 bushels per acre, fantastic. Another part of the field, you may have 300 bushels per acre. Another part of the field, you may have 100 bushels per acre. So the thing is that, and then collectively, you take the area and you do the math, and you see what the field average. But throughout that field, we know that there are different yields in that same field with that same hybrid planted on the same day, seeing the same weather conditions. Well, what happens is that when you have a specification which is made, so it's SAE, made by Society of Automotive Engineers, and it says this is going to be a 5W30 oil. We need a 5W30 oil. Then the oil manufacturers make this oil 5W30, but there has to be a test procedure. There has to be something to identify what that particularly means. But the thing is that, so what happens is that the W with the 5W or 10W or 20W does not mean weight, which a lot of people think that it means winter. And a multi-viscosity oil, so 5W30, means that it's not 5-weight oil and 30-weight oil put together, all right? So what it basically boils down to tell you the truth, it's probably more 5-weight than 30-weight, but what it means is that the oil, that product, that multi-blend, that multi-grade oil, has the performance characteristics of a 5-weight at the cold test temperature and has the performance characteristics of a 30 weight at the hot test temperature. That's what that means. So now the performance of the oil, and they do a lot of also what they call pumpability tests. So the winter, the W rating, so it would be the first number on the can, 5W, that is the oil's performance at 0 degrees Fahrenheit. So that is what the industry has determined is the winter rating. So that is the oil at 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And then the 30 rating is at 5W30, 5 winter. So the oil, that's the oil's flow characteristics at 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And then the 30 rating, the second number, is the oil's characteristics at 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So the oil at zero is the winter rating, and the oil at 212 degrees is the second rating on the can, on the bottle. Ready? So now what happens is that the oil has to perform like those two viscosities at those temperatures. Now, just as I was saying to you about your cornfield, that you have different yields throughout the same field, planted on the same day, planted what have you, is that with the standard that's on the can, the rating standard is only two test points. And it's not telling you how that oil is going to respond at minus 5 degrees Fahrenheit, at 20 degrees Fahrenheit, or on the other side of the 30 weight side on the can, how that oil is going to respond at 190 degrees, at 240 degrees, at 250 degrees, at 230 degrees. And to meet that standard, it just has to be the equivalent at those two test points. So it'll be like going into a field and taking a soil sample in only two places. You have a 100-acre field, you take a soil sample in two places, and you say, okay, this is the CEC here, this is the CEC there. It's not indicative of the whole field, it's those two places. So now that we establish that, is that you have to understand that there is something called the viscometric index chart or viscometric index plot, whatever you want to call it. People call it different things. And what it basically does, it shows the performance of that oil above and below the two test points. And that is what you're paying for by buying a better grade oil, a more expensive oil. The additive package, the refining, the level of the quality of the crude that was used is going to give it that performance above and below those two test points. But at those two test points, the cheap oil and the excellent oil are going to test the same. It's what happens above and below those two test points. So you say to me, that's great, Ray. I'm going to get a viscometric index chart. Well, good luck, because you're not going to get one. Alrighty, no oil company publishes the performance, because the standard basically is that it has to meet the performance at those two test points, 0 degrees and 212 degrees. What happens above and below that is you don't know. I had a person just say to me the other day, he was saying he had an engine, it was a Chevy pickup truck, and he used whatever brand oil, and he would start it up, and he had a lot of valve train noise. And then a lot of valve train noise for the first 30 or 40 seconds. And it was, I think it was a 5W20 motor. And he says he bought it used, and then he did buy it used, but I'm trying to remember the dynamics. But anyway, but he kept about 6 months later, he changed the oil to a different brand of oil. I think he had an oil change in between that. But anyway, he went from brand A to brand B is what I'm trying to say. And I'm going around in a circle confusing you. Brand A to brand B. He put brand B in 5W20 SN oil. He says, son of a gun, I start the motor, it's quiet. There's no valve train noise. He said, how can that be? Because it's the oil's performance above and below those two test points. And so the second oil he bought, the brand B, was a better, when I say a better oil, meaning it had more stable performance. It was probably had better additives in it, more refined, what have you. I'm not a tribologist. A tribologist is one who studies the composition and the performance of oils. But the thing basically is that what you need to understand, just like corn seed is not corn seed, or herbicide is not herbicide, or fertilizer is not fertilizer, is what is in that. And even though the two oils have the same rating, SN5W30, then the thing basically is that you will have two different performances, but at 0 degrees and at 212 degrees, at 0 degrees, it'll act like a 5 weight, and at 30 degrees, at 212 degrees, it'll act like a 30 weight. Everything else you do not know. And that is why you could say that you will have different performance, different levels of wear with buying a better grade of oil. And what I mean by a better grade, a better brand with a better additive package and a better base oils, base stocks, what have you. And this goes for whether it's synthetic or mineral. It makes no difference. It is the same. It's the same theory, the same operation. Now, let's go to the diesel side quickly, and we'll come back and bring this all together. If you look at the modern diesel oils for tier four, is that their rating is CJ4 diesel. All right. And the thing is that just like SN was for gas, CJ4 is the latest oil for tier four, but also there is FA, Ford Apple 4, and that's rated for tier four also. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to touch on this, and this is also going to back up and be relevant for the gasoline. So let's talk about viscosity and how viscosity is tested. All right, so this is not specific to diesel, this is specific to every oil. In simplistic terms, the way the viscosity test is how fast an oil will flow through a tube of a certain diameter, a certain size, at 212 degrees based upon gravity alone. And it is so in essence, they put oil in this tube, and if the tube is a specified size, it's 212 degrees, which is 100 degrees Celsius, and they measure, they time how quickly the oil flows through this tube based upon gravity alone. And that is the test for viscosity. And what it is measured in is called centistokes, centistokes. Alrighty, so centistokes. Now, so viscosity, how fast the oil, it's a time measurement, how fast the oil will go at 212 degrees will go through this tube. And then to get the winter rating, they have a calculation, they go backwards from that, alrighty, in case you were wondering. So what happens, in essence, is that the centistokes, lots of times it's abbreviated CS, measurement of surface tension. And surface tension is the fluid's ability to or lack of friction going across a surface. And in simple terms that we've all experienced is that, let's say if you had a roof on your barn and you're painting with silver paint, the composition of silver paint is almost like water, like gasoline. It tends to run right off. It has less surface tension than if you were to paint the roof white or red or black or green, a paint with more pigment in it, it has more surface tension. So if you were to think of like honey has a lot of surface tension. You turn it upside down and it doesn't come out of the bottle quickly. Right? You take milk out of a bottle, you turn it upside down, it pours right out, it has less surface tension. So centistokes, CS, is a measure in simplistic terms of the surface tension of the oil. So now the industry has a standard. And for 10W30 oil, because I happen to have this specification in front of me. So for 10W30 oil, for it to be considered that, it could have a surface tension in centistokes of between 9.3 and 12.5. So now what happens is that, so you have more, it's still a 10W30 oil, right? Which I was talking about before. And I don't care if it's gasoline or diesel, 10W30 oil. So the thing is that it could have a surface tension of 9.3 to 12.5, which is quite a big range if you do it percentage-wise. So to get back to the guy who was telling me with his Chevy Silverado pickup truck, when he had 10W30 brand ASN oil, is that he had a lot of valve train startup on a valve train noise on startup. And he's a volunteer fireman also. So he said it was a concern. It's because he won't need to start it and go. And he was afraid to drive it aggressively because until the valve train quieted down about 30 seconds later. And when he changed brands of oil, and the valve train was quiet and he could drive it away with confidence to get to the fire station. All right. So if you look at that, what we could basically say, I don't know the exact numbers, but we can make a very convincing argument that the oil brand A that he was using, 10W30SN, probably had a surface tension of about 12.5 centistokes. And the oil that he replaced it with, 10W30 brand, you know, different brand SN rating, all right, had a surface tension of 9.3 centistokes. So that surface tension, still 10W30, still meeting the SN standard. That surface tension is what allowed it to get up to that valve train quicker. And you have to remember, when that valve train is clattering, you've got a lot of excessive wear there. It's not going to wear it out overnight in one day, but you got a lot of excessive wear. So that's what you need. And you're not going to know this. All right, you're not going to know this. I mean, it's not going to be on the side of the can say this is what the centistokes is for this oil, but the rate, but the specification is that is 9.3 to 12.5 for 10W30. Now let's jump back to the diesel side. All right, if we jump back to the diesel side with the CK4, I mean CK4, and the new FA4 oils, which some engines are using, some are not. Then again, go by the owner's manual. All right, they're talking about tier four diesels. Is that a CK4 10W30 oil? Their specification is 12 to 12.5 centistokes. So it's a tighter specification than normal 10W30, which is 9.3 to 12.5. So most CK4s are a tighter tolerance oil, right? They're about 12 to 12 and a half centistokes. You take the FA4, which is the latest diesel oil for some applications, all right? The FA4, still a 10W30 rating, is 9.3 centistokes. So it's a slipperier, for lack of better terms, less surface tension oil. It'll get up into the parts quicker. It'll allow the engine to be built with tighter tolerances because it's going to get there quicker. It's going to be easier to slide through, for lack of better terms. And keep in mind that oil in every engine is also a coolant. That you're flooding, that's why most oiling systems today on most engines, the old school was high pressure. Right, it's not high pressure anymore. It's low pressure, high volume, because you had high pressure because you had a lot of centistokes. You had to try to pump this molasses through there. All right, doesn't mean it's supporting the bearings anymore, but the thing is that once you recognize that oil is also a coolant, that if you could flood those bearings, flood the bottom of the piston with as a coolant, the cylinder walls, what have you. The valve train is that when the oil moves away from that part, it has absorbed heat, and the fresh oil, meaning the oil that is being recirculated, is at a lower temperature, and it actually removes heat from the part. So the thing basically is that that's why you want to flood the bearings, flood the oiling system with a high volume of oil, because it's also a coolant. So the idea that if you have a FA4 oil that your engine calls for, and you say, I'm going to use a CK4. Well, that engine is designed with the clearances and for the flow capability of the 9.3 centistokes versus the 12 to 12.5 centistokes. So it's a complicated world today, right? But that's why we have these engines that are getting great fuel economy, lasting a long time, have clean emissions, just like you're getting, what's his name? Dave Hula got 616 bushels of corn in his test plot. We all know that. I'm not telling you anything new. Well, the thing basically is that there's a lot of little details that make that 616 bushels, and we can't just look at an engine and say, I had a C15 cat, this and new one. It is a reason why it needs to have an FA4 oil. But what I want to explain to you here, and forgetting about the FA4 CK4 diesel side of it, even though it all holds true, is that when you're buying a better grade of oil, you are buying its performance on that Visometric index chart. And remember that the 1030, the 520, the 2050, the 1040, whatever it is, that's only 2 points in your field. That's only, it meets those performance at those 2 points of how it flows through that bottle that at the temperature at 212 degrees. But after that, you do not know anything about its characteristics. And the simple thing to do is to buy a good oil. And then if you do have an engine, for instance, like the person I was talking about with the Silverado pickup truck that was tapping on startup, the valve train was noisy, try going to a different brand of oil. because you may find that you go from brand A to brand B, even though brand A was a name brand, but it may have been their lower quality, their entry-level line. Always buy the most expensive oil you could buy, because that's the cheap, and the rule of thumb is that it's going to have the best additive package and the best and the best surface tension. So, but I don't want you to be fooled into that. All right. So fooled into thinking that it's the same, because it is not. All right. So now what we're going to do is we're going to move on to something about gasoline. And I've done a show on this in detail about octane, and octane is the fuel's ability to resist compression, resist combustion through pressure and heat and wait for the arcing of the spark plug. And as a quick recap, cetane is the exact opposite. Cetane is the fuel's anxiousness to ignite, not its laziness, its anxiousness. It's a dutiful soldier. It's ready to go. It's ready to ignite, all right? So cetane is the exact opposite, but we're talking about octane. And the thing basically is if you pull up to a pump, a gasoline pump, anywhere in the country, it should have a sticker. It should be 87 octane, 92 octane, 95 octane, whatever it may be, all right? And the thing is that it's usually, or I shouldn't say it usually, it is today, it's R plus M divided by 2. And if you look at the pump legally in New Jersey, it's supposed to say that calculated by R plus M divided by 2. You say, what the heck is that? Well, there are two different types of two different octane tests. Just like if you look at a soil sample, you could say weak Bray or strong Bray. All right. So the thing basically is two different standards. And the modern gasoline over the past 20 or 30 years has not been one test. It's been the R, which stands for research, and the M, which stands for motor. So there's a research octane test and there's a motor octane test. And what they basically do is that they take the research test data, octane number, the motor test data, add it together, divided by 2, right? Because that's the average, and that's what you're seeing on the pump. So the thing basically is that if you have a 92 octane gasoline, 87 octane, whatever you're talking about, whatever you're looking at, it's that is an average of its research and its motor octane. All right. Now, keep in mind, as we said, octane is the fuel's ability to resist compression. Combustion through pressure and heat. Now, in simplistic terms, because that's all we need to have at this particular point to understand, is that the research octane is a better indicator of the gasoline's low speed, mildly driven performance, or its ability to resist auto combustion. The motor octane number is the exact opposite. It's the gasoline's high speed and high load ability to resist auto ignition. So you could have two brands of gasoline. They both have 87 octane, and you could have an engine that wants to enter abnormal combustion. We did a show on it last week or 2 weeks ago, abnormal combustion at light load, because it may have a lower research octane and a higher motor octane, but it comes to the same aggregate, the same average, because if it's up 2 points on one and down 2 points on the other, it's going to come to the same average. So the thing is that what you need to understand here is that the R plus M divided by 2 is the average of the research and the motor octane. So you may find that if you have an engine that has the propensity to enter an abnormal combustion event, detonation, in case you didn't listen to the show 2 weeks ago, go back into the archives, it's there, is that, and you say, well, I'm pulling a trailer, all right, and when I'm pulling a trailer, I may not hear it detonating because of today's closed-loop fuel control systems and timing control systems. It's pulling back the timing that you may say, you know, that it doesn't feel as good as it normally does on this brand of gasoline, because at that particular point, when you're pulling a load of cattle, you're pulling a big RV, is that the gasoline needs to have a higher motor octane number than a research octane number. So it needs to be biased towards that. And then likewise, if you say, well, I could pull a trailer, this thing runs great, but it wants to have an abnormal combustion event around at light load, then that's more of a research octane number. Now, I don't want to confuse you. There's a lot of dynamics that are happening inside the engine, all right, to make it sensitive, octane tolerant, or octane sensitive, all right? The thing basically is that, but the gasoline, which is like the soil in your ground, all right, you could say, I have, like, my farm has a 7.1 CEC. Somebody else may have a 15.2 CEC or 20 CEC. They have heavier ground. I have lighter ground. I have to farm differently with 7 CEC soil than somebody who has 20 CEC soil. The idea of putting the seed in the ground remains the same, but the way I have to deal with my fertility and other things, and how rain is going to affect it, or a lack of rain is going to affect it, is all going to come into play. So the same thing happens with research and with motor octane, is that keep in mind, just like with the oil, 92 octane, 87 octane, for the most part, is it could have a different research or a different motor number, but come up with the same value. Don't drive yourself nuts with this. This is like an FYI. So if you come to me and you say to me, hey, Ray, I buy brand A gas and my car runs better on brand A gas than it does on brand B gas, well, it could be two things. It could be, number one, is that it could be the way the octane is calculated on brand B gas. It could be you could have a driving dynamic that it likes that better, all right? Or it could be the energy content of the two gasolines are different. Now, historically, the BTU, the energy content of the gasoline, does not really affect how you the performance as far as you driving. It feels better or feels worse or what have you. Usually, the energy content is what is going to be impact the fuel economy, not so much the performance, the fuel economy. So the thing basically is, but if you have an engine that has a propensity to detonate, and you have, let's say you have a lot of carbon in, it's got high mileage, you got some oil pumping through the cylinders, what have you, and you have a fuel that gets the same R plus M divided by two, but you need to have a higher research number, a higher motor number, whatever it may be, for those driving dynamics where it wants to detonate, have abnormal combustion, then a different brand of gasoline will come up and will give you a tangible performance gain. But the whole idea, as I said in that show, is the modern engine is to build an engine that is octane tolerant and doesn't want a lot of octane. But as it ages and things happen, that things go askew. So keep that in mind, that there's research in motor. Research is the low speed, mildly driven, different RPM, different inlet temperature, different coolant temperature. High speed is the motor, is the high speed performance and the higher load performance at a given inlet temperature, coolant temperature, what have you. All right. So now, the way this is tested, years ago they came up with what is called a cooperative fuel research engine. So if you ever read something and see a CFR engine, that's what that basically is. It's cooperative fuel research engine, and it was made by the Waukesha company back years ago, and I don't know if they still make them. I don't think Waukesha even is in business anymore, and probably other people make that engine. It's called a CFR engine, but it's based upon the original Waukesha design, which was probably post-World War II. Don't hold me to that. Probably post-World War II. And that was the engine that was used to the engine that is used to determine octane of gasoline. And it's a long procedure that one day maybe I'll do a show about it. But for this particular point, it's premature. What you need to understand is R plus M divided by two. And that is why, you know, people look back and people write to me and say, I remember years ago we had 102 octane gas, and then, you know, that 102 octane, it wasn't R plus M divided by two. It could have been 102 octane motor, it could have been 102 octane research. And that's why today's gasoline, and a lot of people don't realize, they call it junk, they call it water, they call it urine. It's really not, because if you have a 92 and 93 R plus M divided by two, or even an 87 R plus M divided by two, in lots of ways, that was a better gasoline that you had years ago, because you were only looking at the one thing, the R or the M, and there was no industry standard. You could have gone to station A and they rated it as research. The station across the street rated it as motor. All right, so the thing basically is that in the two tests, so you could have had an N gasoline that was a 99 octane research, all right, but only was 92 octane motor, all right, but you saw in the pump, I'm going across to Joe's because he's got 99 octane for less money, all right. So the thing basically is that, like I say, it's a complicated world, and the best thing in this complicated world is to be able to have a understanding of this. And so to recap very quickly before we move on, because I want to try to close the show in the next 5 or 10 minutes, and we have to do the toolbox test, is that as far as oil is concerned, remember the rating is only for those set points, the viscosity 10W40 5W40, and the SN is a standard that it needs to meet, but does not describe the oil's performance outside of those two temperatures in the viscosity test. The zero was the winter temperature, and the 212 degrees is the other temperature. So the hyphen number, hyphen 30, hyphen 40, hyphen 50, what it may be. And you could have two oils that are rated the same on the can and have completely different performance characteristics up until that particular point. And those two temperatures, and those two temperatures, it's going to basically be the same for to have that rating, but it skews after that. So keep that in mind. And if you have an engine that makes noise or does something, try a different brand oil of the same standard SN, whatever, and the same viscosity. And if it goes away, then your answer is in that oil's performance in that viscometric index chart that you cannot see. And usually it's based upon its centistokes, its surface friction. And remember, on a 30 weight oil, for example, there's between 9.3 and 12.5 is the surface tension rating in centistokes. And then if you're on the higher side, that oil is not going to flow as easily. And as you're on the lower side, it's going to flow easier and get to parts quicker and sooner. As far as gasoline is concerned, R plus M divided by 2. Research, basically, the light load performance of the gasoline, the motor, the heavier load performance of the gasoline, you have an average. And the thing basically is, like I say, and if you have an octane tolerant engine, it's not a concern. But the thing is that to keep in mind that that is how it is brought about. So it's an average. Just like when you go with your yield monitor on your combine, you get an average for the farm. You get, or that average for that field. You're not getting that 450 bushels that were for 10 feet in the field and saying it's a 450 bushel farm. Per acre farm, you're getting the average. So that's what the R plus M divided by 2 is. If you have any questions about this or comments, as I always like to say, you know, please contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. So now we're going to go to our toolbox test. But before we do our toolbox test, you have to be signaled to put your thinking cap on. And this happens to have something to do with fuel by chance. I don't look at him ahead of time. So, but we need to listen to Tex. Tex, he's the hot rod man. He just basically has a lot of low centistokes there. So he's got that baby flowing good. Come on, Tex. Let her rip, baby.
Well, I'm a rolling daddy with a mean machine. It's got to be an motor that sure is clean. I'm a hot rod man. Yeah, I'm a hot rod
he's a hot rod man.
Look out, little mama, gonna get
you. All righty, so we're on test number 4. Thank you, Tex, and that is from Ripsaw Records. And very shortly, I will have a link. I'll actually have a little ad on my website for Ripsaw Records, because their website is almost done, from what I understand. Okay, so we're on test number 4, and all these tests are on my website. So I think there's 15 or 16 new one every month. 5 questions, multiple choice. Check it out and learn. It's all about learning. That's what it is about. So, all right. So I'm going to read you the test question. Since you farm way into the Nebraska panhandle and your ground is far off the two-lane road, there is no electric power there. But you want to put it in a center pivot to water some hay ground. Due to this, you need to buy an irrigation pump with a diesel engine, and you are looking at a few different brands. The one company lists one of the engine specifications as BSFC, capital B, capital S, capital F, capital C. You ask the salesman what that is, and he gives you some double talk, right? Typical salesman, and then admits that he does not know. The next week, you're at your niece's wedding, and at the reception, you bring up the topic. This is what you're told. So basically, you were trying to find out what BSFC is, all right? Farmer A says that it means brake-specific fuel consumption. Farmer B believes that the term stands for bypass standard fuel control. Farmer C says that it has something to do with an emissions control if the engine is polluting too much, but he can't remember what the letters stand for. And Farmer D states that it represents a diesel engine that is bi-fuel and can run on LP or diesel. So that is what that question is. So in essence, what does BSFC mean? And we have four answers. Four different farmers gave us an answer. And because I am running long today, I am not going to. I have a toolbox test question that happens to do with detonation and understanding it. And I will bring that up to the next week because I went a little bit long and I wanted to give that answer a proper I want to give that listener a proper response to the answer and not give him a rush job. So we're going to have the answer to toolbox test right now. So Farmer A is correct. BSFC stands for brake specific fuel consumption, and it measures the mass of the fuel, usually in pounds, that it takes to make 1 horsepower for 1 hour. If the BSFC is 0.5, so a half a pound, and the engine is developing 100 horsepower at that load, it would take the equivalent of 50 pounds of fuel for it to produce that level of power for 1 hour, and that is approximately 6 gallons of fuel. BSFC changes with engine load and RPM. So it's brake-specific fuel consumption. So it's how much fuel in pounds that the engine requires to develop 1 horsepower for 1 hour. And so it is an indicator of its thermal efficiency. Excuse me. So the lower the BSFC, the less fuel it needs to produce power. So it's still going to be a 100 horsepower motor. Excuse me. Excuse me, but if it has a BFC of 0.5 and another one has a BFC of 0.4, the one with 0.4 is going to produce the same power and use less fuel. So listen, I want to thank you so much for putting up with me today. Thank you so much for listening. And I'm sorry that I did not have the special delivery letter. And once again, I ask you to apologize because my thoughts are with my little guy Donald and his surgery and how I ran him over and caused that damage. So listen, you have a blessed, blessed week and know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, the American farmer and rancher, and my beloved, beloved America. Have a great week, and I hope all is well with you and your loved ones. Bye.